This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good Wednesday morning, everybody. I forgot what day it was. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And this is Jamie Jennings, and I'm in Norman, Oklahoma. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for September 4th, episode 2261, brought to you by horselovers.com. Good morning, horse world.
Everybody up, rise and shine. It's a new day.
It's Wednesday, Wednesday, Wednesday.
Here we can go again.
Oh, and away we go.
And coming up on today's show, we have the first installment of Where in the World is the Horse Radio Network Saddle Pad with auditor Hillary Borman, who is the current caretaker. And if you have no idea what I'm talking about, stay tuned. And then Jane Gardner is going to stop by mid-show and chat about Shetland ponies and her winning ways and adventures at the Shetland Congress. And then we're going to round out our world tour with a chat about anklets for horses. Oh, yeah. Stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Thank you very much, Jennifer. So good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. I have a quick update for you, Jamie. Remember we talked about Irish Olympic show jumper Kevin Babington who broke his neck at the Hampton Classic? Well, apparently went under a five-hour surgery yesterday to stabilize his neck, and he pulled through the surgery, and now it's going to be recovery time. But the fundraiser, I think, is almost $300,000 now. And apparently, because he does not have insurance for anything recovery-related, and he's going to need special equipment and everything. So our best still to him and his family, and thank you to the horse community for stepping up there. One note I had, and this comes from my Red Cross background. There's a lot of fundraisers right now being done by individuals for the Bahamas, and I would say don't give to them, because they're not, unless you know the organization that's doing the fundraising, do not put money in, because, again, that's how fraud has happened in the past. People start a fundraiser and the money never gets there. So give to reputable organizations, and let's limit it to that at this point, because
goes for everything, man. There's just people scamming people right and left with, it's just, it's frustrating. So
it is, and some of them might be well-intentioned, and the money's going to get there, but you can't be sure. So there's going to be a lot of those, especially now with the Bahamas thing. And also, I want to give kudos to the cruise lines. All of them have stepped up. I got an email from Royal Caribbean. They're actually loading up a couple of ships right now to send there with supplies and help. Apparently Disney and also Carnival are all in it. They're all given $1 million. They're all sending ships. So good.
And
for
those
them.
Ships like make a living going to those places. They should absolutely send those ships and be like, hey, people, come on. You got a place to stay for a while. Take a shower,
Well, Disney's really private island is on Grand Bahama. So their private island that they go to almost every sailing is there. They actually had 20 or 30 people hunkered down there in their private island in their bunker. They have a very safe bunker there. And so, they were directly affected by it, and Disney is stepping up too. And a lot of times when they send these cruise ships in, they're loaded with supplies, because they can carry a bazillion pounds of supplies. And also they allow the workers and the first aid and the Red Cross people stay on the ships then. They park them there and they use them as hotels, because there's no place to stay for even the volunteer workers there. So good for them. So anyway, that's an update on things going on in the world. We missed it. It's probably hitting your mom and your brother right now on the coast. And I noticed Daytona was even getting up to 70, 80 mile an hour winds at Daytona Beach. But we were on the very edge. We got a light breeze this morning. It was beautiful out, actually. It wasn't hot for a change. But it's your mom getting it right now. All right, and our best
there you go, Mom.
Everybody in Georgia and South Carolina, North Carolina, where it might make landfall, we're thinking about you guys up there. A lot of horses up that way, so we're thinking about you. Our daily Winnie time. But my daily Winnie is a happy birthday. And that's a happy birthday to host Emily Wood. We just talked to her last week down there in Wellington, getting ready for the storm and now moving her roller horses back. And it's her birthday tomorrow. So happy birthday to Emily. And we're glad that you're feeling a little bit better.
I have something intimidating to tell you. This is scary to me, just to me. My veterinarian, who I have hired and love and adopted as part of the Flyover Farm team.
Fired you?
Well, not yet, but it's coming because it turns out she now listens to the show.
Oh, no. That's never good. See, we really don't want people we know to listen to the show.
No, I told her. So her son and my son are on a baseball team and they had their first game last night. And well, by the way, it's Coach Pitch. And Lucas,
what's it called?
Had his
what?
Coach. It's Coach Pitch baseball. So they're Coach Pitches. So it's not T-ball anymore. Okay. They've stepped up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's in the 7-and-over Coach Pitch.
So he gets a swing and hit a ball that's being thrown to him instead of on a
yes.
stand.
Yes. Oh, wow. Yes. And last night he went 0-for-2. to be fair, everybody.
So he has his mom's hand-eye coordination.
Everybody kind of went over two. I think the only kid that got on base got hit by a pitch by the coach. But my point is, the doctor is not allowed to listen to this show. Absolutely not. She sits down last night and she was like, "How come you don't have a vacuum that sucks down the poop in your barn?" I was like, "What are you talking about? Oh no, you listen to the show. Stop it." So
what's her name? What's her first name?
Her name is, I'll just give you, her name is Dr. White.
Dr. White. Doctor. Well, hi, Dr. White. Welcome to the show.
Now scares the hell out of me.
Yeah, there. Because Jamie sometimes can't resist what she says. So I'll remind you before every episode, Dr. White listens to the show.
I just don't want them to know how neurotic I actually am. Like, that's the problem with listening to the show. I was like, you can't listen to the show. First of all, number one, you're my vet. And number two, it's just too much me. That you can't be my vet and then sit next to me in a T-ball game and listen to me. It's too much. It's too much me for me. So... Stop it. Turn this off right now, Dr. White. I don't like it.
That is a lot of you. I mean, I have enough of just this.
God, right? I get tired of me.
I don't know how Chad does it. Well, he flies away for 4 days at a time.
That's exactly. That's how he's able to manage.
He just leaves. Pat, yeah. I got something I got to bring to you before we get to our first guest. So I'm looking through the news feed this morning like we do every day on all the horse news, and I come across this article. It's 3 tips to help stop your horse becoming arena sour. And then I noticed, I was like, well, where is this at? Some stupid, you know, click for thing trying to get clicks. And then I went, no, it's the FEI blog. It's the actual FEI blog on the FEI website.
Yeah, I see you posted this in our show notes. What Glenn and I do is we look at an outline and we put news stories, and that's kind of how we do the show. And you posted this morning, and I'm logging on and like checking out the things that you've put in there. And I'm like, Chad, come here. You've got to see this article Glenn posted, because I thought you were like really into.
No, I was in Jen, total disbelief.
Jen, I want you to, are you sitting down? Because I'm going to read this is from the FEI blog on 3 tips to help stop your horse becoming arena sour. Number one, are you ready, Jen? Get your pen. Get out of the arena.
They actually wrote this.
Number one, 3 tips to stop help your horse becoming arena sour. Number one, get out of the arena. Leave the arena. Well, number two, stop repeating and repeating and repeating. Like, basically, you know, you're constantly doing circles.
Stop drilling your horse to death over the same thing over and over. And they talk about that a lot on the dressage show, because dressage riders have a tendency to want to do that. And Reese and Philip are like, you can't do that. You can't just bring him in the arena and do an hour of drilling him on the same thing. It's just going to go bad.
So, number 3, here we go. Turn your horse out.
You know,
wow.
I know there's just a lot of these high-end riders who do not turn their horses out. And I just don't get it. So when I saw the headline, I went, it can't be the three simplest things that are common sense. Yep, it was.
Oh my gosh. Hey, so for those of you that are thinking, why is my horse arena sour? Number one, just ride somewhere else. Number two, turn them out. And number three, stop doing the same thing over and over again. Wow, we have learned.
Are we just more educated because we've done this show for 20 some hundred episodes? Or
I really don't feel like an arena sour horse owner, the owner of an arena sour horse, needs to be told, stop riding in the arena. I would think. I mean, I don't know. You know what? I read a lot of weird training tips on Facebook pages. So maybe.
But it's have we been dumbed down in the horse world to this point?
I don't know. I just couldn't believe that story. And what's great is that I thought you were serious.
No, that's why I wrote, sometimes I wonder. I just could not believe I was reading it. On the FEI, this isn't just some blog. It was on the FEI website. The FEI website is directed to FEI members who are the highest level of riders in the world.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Maybe I can't. There's no excuse for this. I don't know. I can't figure it out. We know what we're going to do, some training tips coming up at the end of the show. So we'll help you with a little more elevated intelligence, hopefully.
Well, I will say there is something very fun that's happening right now that you're going to want to check out. Dr. Seuss's what may be his last book is coming out right now, and it's about horses. It's called Dr. Seuss's Horse Museum, and it's a book about the role of horse in art history. And it was developed from one of two manuscripts discovered at the artist's home in 2013, because, of course, Dr. Seuss died. Theodore, is it Geisel? Geisel?
Geisel.
Died in 1991. The actual Dr. Seuss. So they did publish another one in 2015 called What Pet Should I Get? And they were working from illustrations and from the script. And this Australian illustrator named Andrew Joyner put this book together. And it's now out. You can go buy it. So if you want really what they think is going to be Dr. Seuss's last book, you can go buy it right now. It's called Dr. Seuss's Horse Museum. And it actually is full color, and it looked pretty cool. I saw some of the illustrations in it, and it's an equine tour guide through the museum showing full color photograph reproductions of famous horse artwork. So there you go. Dr. Seuss's new book is out.
Cool. I love it. Well, is our first guest ready?
I am hoping. She was having trouble getting her on, so let's see if she's there.
Just to explain what the traveling saddle pad is, Glenn had these Horse Radio Network saddle pads. Basically, it's just a baby pad, really thin pad with the logo. And he sent me one and said, I'm not allowed to compete in it because he didn't want people to know that I was with the Horse
Radio.
Yeah,
you weren't allowed to compete in it. That's right.
But other people apparently are, but they're very hard to find. And so one person had one. And so in an effort to spread the wealth, because there are very few in existence, they started the Sisterhood of the Traveling Saddle Pad, they being auditors that listen to the show. And so they keep the saddle pad, I guess, for a couple months and then send it on. And it came up on yesterday's show. Where is the saddle pad now? Because we were naming different things with horse radio. Anyway, so we have Hillary on because Hillary reached out and she's like, I have the pad. So let's see if Hillary is here. Good morning, Hillary.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, I do. I do have the pad. It's in New Jersey right now.
Wow. Okay. So where did you get the pad? Who did you get it from? Do you remember?
I got it from Chantel, and I think she's in New York. I'm not sure if she's quite upstate, but it didn't have to come too far to get to me. But I believe the whole thing started with Ruby Kaufman. She's the one that won the original pad and made us all jealous. So she decided to send it along. And I think I'm like the 11th or 12th person in the journey so far.
Is this pad still functional? Because it seems like it was very thin and not, describe the condition of the pad.
It's actually in really great condition. It's just a white baby pad. So it looks like people have been very careful with it. and it's not particularly stained or anything. Probably is going to get the worst abuse from me since I rode in it on Monday and it got completely soaked and I'm waiting for it to dry before I can wash it. So
where did you, yeah, where has the pad been? Where has the pad been with you?
So with me, earlier, I guess at the end of July, I took it to a clinic with Bully Selmar, who's a pretty established eventer up here. And then on Monday, it went to a clinic with Boyd Martin.
Okay, so the pad is educated. So basically, the next person gets the power of Boyd Martin.
I hope so. I hope so. He told me I was on fire. So I hope that that goes on with the next person.
Is that good or bad in Boyd's terminology?
Oh, no, it was good.
Oh, okay.
Was there anything else that stuck out that he told you? Much like, I don't know, get a better saddle pad. Anything like that?
Oh, no, no. No, he liked my horse. But
good.
Yeah. So it's been on quite a roll. I'm kind of excited. I think there's almost 20 people who are still waiting. I know it's a pretty long list, so it should have a lot of fun stories. We've got a little notebook that travels along with it.
Really? Oh, there's a notebook that travels along with it?
Yeah, there's a little notebook, and everybody's written down what they've done, and, you know, people have moved and taken it with them, and it's been on a lot of adventures. It's gone to some shows. It's gone to a bunch of trail rides.
You know,
cool.
If that cheap bastard that owned the Horse Radio Network would just have more pads made, we wouldn't have this problem.
That's what I'm thinking.
You know, I think at the very end, everybody should get their own.
Yeah, I think so too. I actually was up for just making Horse Radio Network patches and putting them on saddle pads of your own choice. That's what I was wanting to do, but so far that cheap SOB hasn't had that happen yet.
You know, what's interesting though is that this being a cheap baby pad, it's lasted a long time, by the way. But it being a baby pad worked out because then anybody could use it under any saddle. It worked out that way.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Tell yourself that.
That's how I've been using it. I have to use a poly pad on my horse, but I just stick it right on top. Looks great.
See, I am a genius. So tell us about Boyd Martin. How is he as a clinician?
Yeah, I want to hear about that.
Really, really fun. I haven't been able... I had ACL surgery last year, so I've been trying to kind of get back into the swing of things. He was really supportive and very encouraging. So it was, like I said, pouring rain. So the horses were being a little weird. But, you know, he was right there with the exercises and adjusting it as needed. And it was really positive. It was such a good experience.
So one of the things that makes me nervous about going to clinics is, and I think I've said this before, my lower leg is really good. And I feel like my lower leg on over a fence or on riding a horse makes me appear braver than I actually am. So what makes me nervous about going to clinics is you may not know the clinician and they might overface you. And so I get nervous. Do you feel like he appropriately taught everybody in the clinic, or do you feel like some people were underfaced or overfaced?
In our group, he was lowering the fences for a particular rider. So, you know, he was making it work for everybody. As soon as he saw them go a few times, it was just like, okay, let's switch the order of go. And the jump crew was very busy.
Gotcha.
But yeah, it was really good. He was very attentive to what people needed.
That's great. Well, cool. So you would recommend him as a clinician?
I would. It was a bit of an expensive day, but it was so fun.
Well, I mean, my God, you know, you're going to have to pay to play with Boyd, which exactly. I just saw he's hiring. So if anybody is looking for a job, I think they're looking for an employee. So I just saw him post that on Facebook. So, well, great, Hillary. Well, when is the saddle pad departing and moving on?
So I think I want to try and take it to a Hunter Pace in the next couple of weeks here. And then I will be sending it off to the next person on the list. I'm not sure who that is yet. So y'all need to check in with me on the Facebook page.
All right. Yeah. Whoever you are, get a hold of Hillary and we'll make sure you get the pad. Well, great. Thank you so much for coming on and telling us about it. That's exciting.
Yeah, it's super cool. Thanks for having me, guys. Have a great day.
Thanks, Hillary.
You too. Bye.
And of course, we'll continue to follow the pad better than we have in the past. Because apparently we haven't. So there's so much that goes on with the auditors that I don't even know about. I mean, they have their own little meetups, and there's just so much going on there. By the way, if you want to become one and get in on the super cool kid club, you can go to horseradionetwork.com, click on the auditor banner, and it's for little as a dollar a month. You too can join the auditor club and become an auditor. And there's lots of these things that happen. What did we count? There's like 10 different sub rooms underneath the auditor room for different things. I know they have the sci-fi room. That's very active, by the way, the sci-fi room. So definitely check it out and become an auditor today. It's worth it, and you'll find a lot of terrific people in there for sure.
I have a news story for you, Glenn.
All right.
All right. So it was one of our auditors actually posted this, and then I had to go on and research a little bit more. There's a Catholic school in Nashville that has removed Harry Potter from its shelves as they claim the book's spells are real. You can really,
really
do witchcraft.
I want the hiding cloak that Harry had.
The invisibility cloak.
Yeah, with the invisibility cloak. That'd be fun.
Our article, and what's funny is this Catholic school pastor hates the fact that this has gone viral, but he goes on to say that these books present magic as both good and evil, which is not true. The curses and spells used in these books are actual curses and spells, and which, being read by a human, risk conjuring evil spirits into the presence of the person reading the text.
What?
That's right. Did you know that while you were internally reading Harry Potter and you read the curse of Avada Kedavra, somebody died, apparently, because like that is a thing. So I went on and I tried to think of all the good that Harry Potter has done, and like 68% of children the age of 17 and under, like between 8 and 17, have read the Harry Potter books. And that was what was so great about Harry Potter, was how many children actually picked up an actual book to read, because
that's
Harry
probably
Potter,
the last one they picked up too.
I know. Well, they just needed the next go around. I mean, all the Harry Potter books people have read.
I know one person that did a lot of good for, and that's a certain author. Did a lot of good for her.
And
we saw her castle.
She spread the wealth. Yeah. She is definitely she pays it forward for sure. So anyway, I just wanted y'all to know.
We saw the place where she wrote part of it.
I know, you know what? I was so irritated. In London, we went there for like 4 days, you know, Chad and Lucas and I, and they do tours of Harry Potter places in the book or in the movie. And they take an iPad and they hold up the scene in the movie and show you the building. And it's a Harry Potter tour. And it's like 2 hours and you walk around London and you take this tour of Harry Potter, and nobody would do it with me.
She did a lot of work during that time in Edinburgh. So, and a lot of the inspiration came from Edinburgh, which you can see once you go to Edinburgh, you can see Harry Potter written all over it.
They did studies to show that children that have read Harry Potter have way more compassion for anybody different,
for magic,
because of the purebloods and mudblood, all those like terminology that she used to make separate the different classes of people. Anyway, it was really interesting. I got down a rabbit hole of the good Harry Potter has done, but apparently not in Nashville at this church. Can't read it.
Boy, it all comes down to character development too, doesn't it? You know, that's the reason Downton Abbey, I watched a special on that. The truly ones that go viral and become mega hits, it all is down to character development. And there are very few authors that can really do that well with a large ensemble of characters. That's the other thing Harry Potter had, was a large ensemble of characters. It wasn't just Harry. So, you know, they say that that's one of the reasons, because there was somebody that everybody could relate to.
Yeah, obviously in Game of Thrones, I related to the princess who had the dragons. Hello,
I'm sure you did.
Queen.
I'm sure you did. I didn't watch Game of Thrones, so I don't know which one. Was that the blonde one? The really pretty blonde one?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I kind of loved her. So, okay.
I think everybody kind of loved her, male and female alike.
And then in the end, then we can't discuss what happens in the end because some people might not have seen it like you. But I love me some Jon Snow.
Horselovers.com. Go there today. And if you weren't there over Labor Day weekend, you missed it because they had a clearance going on. And if you go there right now, it's still going on. I don't know how much longer. We're recording this on Wednesday morning about 10:30. I would say go there as soon as you hear it because it's probably going to disappear. But they had dollar days. They had things for $1 and $2. It's like the dollar store. They had things for $5. They had things for $10. And they had a whole section of thing for $25. So you could go in there, pick the amount that you wanted to, and you could just buy away. In addition to that, see, they never just have one thing going on at a time. They had a clearance going on, a Labor Day clearance that had hundreds of products that were marked way down. I don't know how they make any money. I don't know how they make this happen, but they do. And it's the cool thing about horselovers.com is it's equipment, it's English, it's Western. A lot of stores just do English and don't do Western or vice versa. It's health, it's blankets. They have it all, apparel and footwear. And they have, you know, English boots and Western boots, all kinds of different things. Their clearance right now, I just checked, is 125 pages and there's 20 on each page.
I would like to point out, too, that Jen sent us all to the Justin Tall Boots.
Yeah. Yeah. Last week you said you got them in but hadn't tried them yet.
Oh my God, I love them.
Do they fit?
And so I like them so much that Chad was like, you should go buy more because they're actually incredibly comfortable. They almost felt broken in.
You paid like $20, didn't you?
Yeah, they were $29.99, I think. And so I went to buy more and they were out of my size.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, we shouldn't have talked about them.
They're super nice. I really like them. So I don't know how long they'll last, but they're really grippy and they're awesome. And I got them on horselovers.com.
You know, it's tough. I mean, you're taking a real risk when you're buying tall boots without trying them on because you just don't know because they all fit different. So apparently a lot of our listeners got lucky too and they fit. So that's good. For $29, if you wear them for 2 months, it's worth it.
It's true because I school and I have schooling boots and they're a falling apart mess. So whenever you have duct tape on your tall boots, it's time for new tall boots.
It's time for new tall boots. That's right. All right, let's go to our next guest. By the way, that's horseloverswithaz.com. Go check it out today because the deals do go away quickly. You're going to want to find them. Well, our next guest is Jane Gardner. We're going to be talking today about Shetland ponies because the 2019 Shetland Congress just happened. And is there a cuter place that you're going to go in the world than a place with hundreds of Shetland ponies in one spot? No, there is not a cuter place. Jane, good morning.
Good morning.
So I drive a Hackney pony, and I personally think my Hackney pony's cute. He is cute. He's adorable. But Shetland ponies just come in so many varieties of colors and sizes, and they're just all adorable. So is the cuteness factor like times a million when you go to Shetland Congress?
Oh, it's very interesting. You know, they are all enjoyable, and there's so many variations in the breed. We have classics and foundations and moderns. So it's interesting to see how they've all developed into kind of specific areas for different uses.
And now I'm a driver, and I know that you do some driving too, right?
Oh, yes. That's my primary interest. We started out in miniatures, and then I met a friend who raised the Shetlands that also have miniature registration, and so we've just kind of expanded and gone on into the Shetlands now, but the biggest I have is about a 42-inch, so not a huge Shetland by any means.
Now, I know there's different classifications of Shetlands, and they come in many different sizes and things like that. So do you find people being attracted to one particular kind of Shetland, or do a lot of people, because you never have just one, do people find themselves with multiple different sizes and shapes?
Yes. A lot of folks do. I started out, my friend that breeds them has mostly foundation Shetlands, which have a little heavier bone and are more likely to have a not as high a trot as a modern, say. And then there's also classics, which are don't have foundation papers, but are still a little heavier boned than the finer moderns.
I have a question. I grew up with Shetland ponies. Okay. My first one came from a summer camp and the camp was closing. So I got a Shetland pony there. Mm-hmm. And then obviously Peter needed a friend. And so we went to the auction and bought Piper. So we had two little Pinto Shetlands, Peter and Piper. And what kind are they when they're really short, really fat, and fairly mean?
That's your classic American Shetland.
Okay, that's the kind I had.
That's the kind every kid gets.
We all knew those. Yes, we all knew those ponies. You know, I think it was the kind that Roy Rogers used to give away, you know, in his, TV show. And they'd run you into the fence or just knew exactly how high that branch was that could sweep you off that his back.
Oh yeah. And because there's no tack or there wasn't back then, I would have to ride them bareback. And I, at some point almost could hook my ankles underneath the, you know, where the girth would go. And yeah, they knew exactly, but here's the thing they actually knew. This is the intelligent part, is that if I was going to go out and get them for food or for to do anything, they would be no problem. But if I went out there to ride them, I was like going to go catch them to ride them. Hey, see you later, sister. Yeah. I mean, they just know.
Oh, they do. And they, you know, we all had friends that had those, that kind of pony. And the funny part is that, you know, they probably didn't have, they probably weren't registered animals. That's one
I
of the things.
I guarantee that.
They weren't the finest of breed. There might have been some a different kind of breeding along the way with some of those ponies.
I think Peter was 37 years old when I got him.
Well, that's the other thing about Shetlands. They live forever.
Oh, my God.
They live forever. Yeah, 40, you know, being 40 is not impossible and being a Shetland. But, yeah, like I say, there's lots of backyard breeders that make those cute little ponies that we do that, but then there's, you know, the difference in a true show horse that we all try to acquire and train.
I want to ask you about Congress before we get into your particular ponies. I wanted to ask you about Congress. Mm-hmm. Tell us about Shetland Congress. I assume there's like a million different classes and different types of things riding and driving going on.
Yes. They, you know, there's a lot of halter, of course, and it's held in Lake St. Louis, Missouri, which is just outside of St. Louis. And there's somewhere, I believe there was about 800
oh my God.
Ponies up there for the show. And there's all different categories. And with there's specific classes for foundation bred horses, which have to be certified that all their parents were pure Shetlands. And there's also the classic, which is a little taller, a little heavier, might still have foundation papers. Then there's the modern division, which is a very refined category. And those do have a lot of, probably have Hackney in their background.
Yeah.
To add that, you know, lighten the bone and put more action into them.
Yeah, they've done that with Hackneys too, and mine's more of the old fat kind of Hackney.
Yeah.
So now there's something.
Yeah, and then there's also.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, there's also categories for part bred, part Shetland crossed with even quarter horse and other breeds.
Okay.
So there's lots to choose from.
Now, I saw that you were doing something called Western driving. Now, I'm a driver. I didn't know there was English or Western driving. What's the difference?
There's sort of three categories. Actually, there's more than that. But basically, there's country driving, which has a little bit of action to it. There's pleasure driving, which has a maximum knee action, almost looks like a saddlebred, real high headset. And then what I do is Western pleasure driving, which is more on the order of what quarter horse Western driving looks like. There's the headset has a slight, it's fairly level. There's a slight arch to the neck, and there's a nice long sweep to it, like a hunter horse would have to their stride, as opposed to the up knee action.
What's the one called where your horse barely moves his feet and is super lazy? Because that's the one I have.
That's what they've invented those little whips for.
Yeah, well, that doesn't help with it.
gently inspire. with the green, we train our own horses here. A girlfriend and I work a lot at it, and it's very funny to start an animal, and you know you do a lot of groundwork with them, and then you introduce them to a cart, and at first they're like, oh my God, should I pull this? What am I doing? And there's this real tentative walk they do, you know, and as the a week or two progresses, all of a sudden they go, oh, I can do this. Hey, look what I'm doing. And they suddenly put the effort into it and start a forward motion. But they don't really get to their peak until you get them into a show ring and they're going, hey, look at those guys. I'll follow them.
Yeah. that's when they speed up. So now tell us about Fire Away.
STS Fire Away, bred by a friend of mine and actually owned by a different gentleman, Tom Graham up in Ohio. He had him as a stallion and was thinking he was going to breed him and then changed his mind. So apparently he'd been standing in a stall for 2 or 3 years, not doing anything. He was 6 or 7 when we got him. We gelded him because he was 42 inches. He's big. It's bigger than anything a little bit of breeding I do. I don't like the bigger guys for that. And so it took us about a year and a half to get him into a cart. Another friend from Michigan actually helped us, Ohio, get him into the cart. And we brought him home and started driving him. We thought he'd be a country horse with some knee action and a headset, and all of a sudden we discovered, nope, he was best suited to the Western. We'd shown him at 3 different shows over the course of the show season, and he ended up going to the Congress with us, and we had a heck of a good time with him. Won a number of classes, so he's kind of fun because he was older, and normally I'm working with 3-year-olds, so it was nice to have a horse that's got a little more maturity on them. They think a little more carefully, I think.
Congratulations really with him. Took him from a stall. It took some time, but got him into the ring, and you know, then he becomes a champion, and that's pretty cool. Whenever we can find a horse that's been staying around doing nothing, and then all of a sudden becomes something, and that says a lot. There's one other thing before we let you go that I wanted to ask you about is Liberty classes. What do they do in Liberty classes? I know I've seen Liberty classes before, but is this kind of a freestyle Liberty where you can do whatever you can get your horse to do, or what is it?
It's just about that. It's 90 seconds of music. You pick a piece of music and you release your horse. And it's kind of funny. They all of a sudden kind of get it. I don't know why. People tell me they train for Liberty. We really don't. We just make sure our horses are happy and have enjoyed their day. You release them and they take off. Now what the judges like to see is trotting and running in both directions around the arena, a flag tail or some kicking, kind of bucking is encouraged. And basically we kind of just stand back and make sure he keeps moving while he's out there. And we've been very fortunate with that. We won the Liberty at the Congress, and I've also won it at the AMHR, the mini show I'm headed to last year.
Well, this is more of a show-off class than a liberty class that
we
would
think. It's a show-off, yes. I think it came from the Arabian. Arabians tend to do that.
Yeah, they do.
They have a liberty-type class where they turn. And that's where I think the idea came from. And it is fun. We usually work a little silly. We put on some Hawaiian shirts and carry a little shaker out there, a little whip, and we kind of stand back, and hopefully they just take off and have a good time. And you know, that's the funny part. He is a Western pleasure horse that they move out in Western pleasure, but here he is picking up his knees and throwing his head and checking out the crowd. And you know, it's a lot of fun to see what they do.
Jamie is training for the Thoroughbred Makeover coming up next month, and she has this Thoroughbred, and she was going to do a freestyle class. Maybe that's it, Jamie. You just do the show-off class. You just let him out there in the arena. Just let him out in the arena and let him show off and play and do whatever he's going to do, and he'll probably win.
That's probably what's going to happen anyway.
Well, Jane, this has been great. Do you have a website?
No, but we're Field of Dreams Miniatures and Shetlands on Facebook, and that's where we put most of our information and activities.
All right, so it's Field of Dreams Miniature Horses and Shetlands. You can find it on Facebook. We'll put a link to it.
Miniatures and Shetlands.
Miniatures, yep. And Shetlands. Okay, and we'll put a link to it on our Facebook page as well. Thank you a bunch for coming on, and keep the cuteness going.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
So apparently there are some well-behaved Shetlands. You just didn't happen to own any.
They were not those horses. Hey, I read something I was going to tell you about real quick before we go to our song, Glenn. And this is something you mentioned, FEI, and talking about kind of the way things are nowadays. I saw this on there's a Facebook page called the Dressage Breeders Group. And I joined it when I was looking for a sire, baby daddy for Pink. And I just saw this posted yesterday, and I thought I had to bring it to you. And it's posted by a member of the group, but her friend is a lawyer. And she says that a good friend of mine just got an interesting case. Okay. She let me read it because I breed warm blood horses. Another breeder down here sold a colt as an FEI prospect. In his sales contract, he stated that the colt was high caliber FEI mount. The colt was sold as a three-year-old lightly started, and the buyer made it clear and added to the contract that he was only buying this colt because there was a guarantee that the colt could compete FEI if correctly trained. The horse...
Well,
the colt,
how long does that take?
So basically, I'm going to sell this horse, and you're looking for an FEI mount. Well, I guarantee you this will be an FEI mount.
But that takes years. Are you going to return it in 4 years when it doesn't become one? Was there a time limit?
Well, let me tell you what happened.
Okay.
The horse, gelded now, is clearly not talented enough, and the buyer is now suing the breeder who guaranteed it would be an FEI colt, not just for the cost, but the 4 years of board and training also on top of the cost of the horse. So basically, Glenn, I've got this horse for sale for right now, and I guarantee it's only been under saddle for like a week, but I guarantee it'll be an FEI horse. And they bought it, and he put in the contract, this is an FEI horse. And 4 years later, the horse is not. And then you're turning around and suing me because the horse is not an FEI mount.
Well, the breeder's an idiot, first of all.
Right? Oh my gosh.
Again, we come back to that common sense thing, don't we?
Yeah. I mean... Do not sell an unstarted, untested, just don't sell horses with guarantees. I mean, that horse left his barn as a three-year-old, no knowledge of what it did for the next 4 years, and then gets sued afterwards because they couldn't get it into the FEI level. They're both idiots.
Yeah, I mean, the trainer could suck. We don't know. I don't know that, but you know, that's the risk you're taking, right?
Exactly. I just thought that was so
interesting. I'd be interested to see what the court finally decides on that. The breeder may lose that.
The breeder may lose, but I mean, it's the day two idiots met. Like, one who bought it with that and one who sold it with that.
Well, the one who bought it, you know, he's not so much an idiot because he knew he could come back on that if.
Yeah, it's true.
So the guy, you know, the idiot here was the seller, and he's probably going to pay for that. Stupidity.
So right now I've got a
You think he still has that in his contracts, by the way?
Baby Zara is now 2 years old, and she'll be started in January because she'll be three, and I'll back her for about 30 days, and then I'm going to sell her to you guys. Any of you that want to buy a FEI definite.
Definite.
Yes. Zara is your horse. God.
Now, there won't be a contract because Jamie's not stupid.
You just have to take my word for it.
It'll be in the ad, but that won't be in the contract.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's, you know, you got to get a hold of your friend Jared Rogerson because he has a new album out, and I've emailed him, and he won't respond. So it's up to you to try and get him set up. He just isn't getting back to me. So he's promised to do a special episode with us again about this new album he has out, and I haven't heard from him. So you need to get a hold of him and push him a little bit.
I'll work on it. All right.
So I'll play one of his songs today as encouragement. Jared, if you're listening, we need you to come on the show. Talk about your new one.
We hear this new album.
We need time. I've been too busy selling records, I guess. But we're going to hear his song called Heyday right after this word from Ovation. Then we're coming back with some training tips, right?
Yep.
All right, good.
Horse people know that they can count on Ovation's value, quality, and style when it comes to hard-wearing schooling attire, affordable show gear for horse and rider, or top-of-the-line equipment for riders at every level. From breeches to bridle work, saddles to stock ties, helmets to half chaps, Ovation is the premier brand of riding apparel and equipment for you and your horse in the United States, outfitting riders at every level from head to toe. Ask for Ovation brand riding helmets, breeches, and footwear at your local tack store, or go online to ovationriding.com and see the fantastic variety of quality, fashion-forward, affordable products from Ovation. ovationriding.com.
Put 40 hours in this weekend, man, it's only Wednesday. I've been cussing this damn heat all day long, there's got to be another way. So I pick up my guitar and I write a song. Everybody hears and they sing along. Hey, hey, it's a heyday. Hey, hey. Payday. My boss is such a jerk, I swear he's never been outside. And I've just been his yes sir man, and I'm running out of time. Everything about this is all wrong. It's time to live some dreams before they're gone. Hey, hey, it's a heyday. I'm going down this road, 'cause I'll be there around 8 o'clock in time for my next show. My smile's from ear to ear where it belongs. Everybody's dancing and singing along. Hey, hey, it's a heyday. Hey, hey, yeah, I'm making my own payday.
That is Jared Rogerson. You can find all of his music at jaredrogerson.com. And Jared, we're waiting. Let's go. Chop, chop. All right. You had some training questions from auditors, I believe, right?
I did. So I mentioned, I guess about a week ago, how Groot, he was not a good traveler, and he would get in the trailer. Once I taught him to load, he would get in, and as soon as you closed him up, he would freak out and like start pawing and striking and just generally tearing up the trailer. And you know, it's hard to school that and hard to correct that when they're in the trailer, and he only did it when the trailer was locked and closed up. It comes to find out there's always a reason for behavior the horse has, and it turns out I talked to his old race trainer, and I finally tracked it down, and I was like, hey, was there a trailer accident? Was there something happened to him in a trailer? What is the deal? And he was like, oh, you know, it's Oklahoma people. You know what? He would never load, so we just gave him some dorm and throw him in the trailer. So basically, Groot would wake up in a trailer. So that is why he does not like to load, and he loads now, but he was carrying on in there. And the best way to sort that out, a horse that kicks the stall, like say you feed your horse and they paw or they kick. I had a mare fracture a coffin bone because somebody put a stallion next to her and she kicked the wall so hard she broke her coffin bone. So kicking in the stall is super dangerous. Pawing in the stall, they can really hurt themselves. So you have to kind of nip it in the bud. But aside from like, what do you do? You're not in the trailer. Yeah, you're not in the trailer. You don't want to stand behind them when they're kicking and tell them no, you know. So there's a thing that Monty, he didn't develop it. He actually saw somebody, but he really likes it. And it's called, this question came from Monica and says, hi, Jamie. I heard you talk on Hit'em about a sort of anklet that your farrier made for baby Groot to keep him from kicking the trailer. I'm curious because my horse started kicking the trailer. I learned about kick chains. I did not like the sound of it since it sounded cruel. And I rejected it out of hand. She goes on to say some nice things about me. But she's like, what are you using?
See, I thought when you said that the other day, I thought hobbles right away.
Yeah, no, not hobbles.
Yeah, I was surprised. I know, I was surprised. That's why I'm glad you're explaining this today.
So this just my farrier made it. And if you go to Monty's book, From My Hands to Yours, there's like a template for how your farrier can make this. But your farrier has to actually want to make it and be skilled. And mine is, and she will actually make them for you and sell them. I think it's a ring. It's an anklet, a bracelet, if you will. And you put it on, and it has like a little shoelace tie on it. And you tie it almost like you put it on like a bell boot, but it's a metal ring. And when your horse is walking or standing still, it doesn't do anything. But when they kick, think about having a metal bracelet and you kick out with use your hand and like strike out. That bracelet hits your coronary band. And it's not super painful. I mean, it's not like it's traveling, you know, a foot and a half. It's just right around their ankle. So it just kind of dings their coronary band. And it self-teaches. So when you're training a horse, you have to think of, it's called picnic. Positive instant consequences, negative instant consequences. The key is it's instant. It has to be instant. And when they kick, and then instantly that metal ring hits their coronary band or massages it or whatever you want to call it, there's an instant consequence there and you have no part of it. You're not in a dangerous situation. You have to stop your horse from kicking. I have seen kick chains and kick chains. The problem with kick chains is your horse can step on it with the other ankle.
I was basically wondering about that. Yeah.
They're really not effective and the horse can kick and the chain might not even hit him in the back of the leg. That can do a lot of damage. They hit their other leg with the chains. It's just very, to me, I have seen them used them on that mare that kicks stalls and it's just very ineffective. These are very effective. They work when they're being needed and they don't do anything when they're not being needed and they can't step on them and trip over them and all that nonsense. So, if anybody does need these, Monty doesn't sell them. They're just a template in his book, but it's taken me a long time to find somebody to make it. And my farrier, bless her heart, her name is Mackenzie. She's so sweet. She made like two or three of them before I actually decided on one. And I've tested it out now and it's awesome. Oh my gosh. Like I put them on him. I loaded him in the trailer. He struck the wall one time. That's it. And since then, I've trailered him now two or three times, and I've used him the first two, and the third time I didn't even put him back on him. And he didn't go crazy or strike. It's just, it just teaches them to not do it. So if anybody wants them, she said it, because the steel is, it's just basically iron, and it's a thick, like, iron bar that goes around, and it's heavy. And so it just sits there until they kick. And it, she said she can make them for $60, and they have a hole in them, and we put shoelaces in them and everything. So if anybody does want those, $60, and then I guess I have to mail them. But, I think you can just mail them in an envelope and not worry about weight. I don't know. But if you are interested, just let me know, because, wow, it made a huge difference. And horses that kick are going to hurt somebody or themselves, mostly themselves. And then you have a more than $60 vet bill. Mm-hmm. So think about that. So I hope, does that explain
yes,
it at
that
all?
Explains better, because I think everybody had their own, in their own mind, what that was.
Yes. Yeah. So that's what it is. It's just a metal
bracelet. I pictured
bracelet.
The prisoners in the old movies, you know, with the shackles and chains. That's what I pictured. And then I pictured you having the horse mounted to the floor, you know.
No, you know what's bad is that I went for a lesson and he was going crazy in the trailer. I just thought I could, like, train him out of it. You just keep taking him places. It was
yeah, if you're
working
in the trailer.
And I just kept taking him. And finally, the instructor that I went to take a jump lesson with was like, oh, my God, you have to hobble that horse immediately. I was like, why? So then he can strike with the foot, pull his other foot off the ground, and then get stuck underneath the slant load, right, you know, slats. I was like, that's like a terrible idea to just hobble a horse and put him on the trailer. I'm sure there's benefits for hobbling. You know, I've seen horses like up in the mountains, they have to hobble the main horses that keep them from running. I'm sure there's a time and place for everything, but that's not something that I would use. I really like these because, again, they don't do anything if they're not needing it. And again, it's very instant and it's safe for you because you're out of the way. The next training question was Helena, and she typed in, she decided to work her horse in their field today on the lunge line. She said, it's the first time we've put those two things together, field plus lunge. She was pretty good until she needed to spaz out. Usually I free lunge her in my makeshift round pen, but sometimes I put her on the line to help her think about starting to put her body together in the right way. When she's in the sand ring, she does sometimes need to rev her engine for a bit. She doesn't go insane, but she does go, 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 go. Anywho, when you're lunging a horse on the line and starts to get all nutty, what do? I yanked on the line once or twice, and that brought her back to planet Earth, but I could tell it was hard for her to suppress all that bucking and goofing about that she needed to do. She finally popped in the air in this epic, hysterical buck type thing, so I let the line go. She trotted away, and then she eventually came back. This was just something that I was discussing on the OTTB Connect page, was something very similar to this. And somebody said, put a lip chain underneath them and lunge them that way. No, don't do that. Number one, this is why I wanted Helena on the show today, because I wanted to ask her, why does she lunge her horse before she rides it?
I think I think she had a farrier vet coming out this morning.
Oh, yeah. So I think she had a farrier. So what I wanted to ask is, why does everybody feel like they have to lunge their horse first? I'm sorry. When we're going to work, we're going to work. You do not get to play. You have time out in the pasture. I'm sure that the horse has turned out. That's your time to play. I only ask for 1 hour of your day. 1 hour. You know what? You can have your whole day when you start shoeing yourself and feeding yourself and cleaning up your own poop. Right now, it's my hour. I pay for you. I take care of you. You're going to work for an hour and not be an a-hole. So, number one, I don't lunge before I ride. Yes, I have a round pen. And if I do feel like Baby Groot really needed some work on his top line to get stronger for the canter, okay, because his canter was a mess and he really couldn't figure out how to canter in a connected, just canter in a circle, really. Yes, I would lunge him in my round pen. There is no line on him and there are side reins. So I put side reins on to teach them to actually use their body. If you look at a camera, like if you put a camera up above, and they have it on Monty Roberts University, of somebody lunging a horse, they don't use themselves properly. whenever you're lunging a horse, they will inevitably be into pressure and they will be bent to the outside.
Yeah, they're always bent to the outside.
They're
it seems
bent to the outside because they immediately pull back. And so you're actually not getting them to use themselves in the correct way. If you have to lunge, put some side reins on so you can actually, you know, slowly incorporate the horse's muscles and ligaments and tendons to be used in the correct way. That being said, lunging is terrible for your horse. Not only does it get them bent in the wrong direction, which, by the way, makes them cross canter, crossfire, or disunite, or whatever they, if you, I can tell a horse that has been lunged to death because they will canter on the left lead in the front, the right lead on the back. They will cross canter. It is inevitable because that's how they're bent on a lunge line, and that's how they have to balance. It is incredibly hard on their back and on their, especially inside hock, and you'll see a lot of hock desmite. It's like swelling, hock injections. People need a lot of hock injections for horses that are lunged a lot. It's very, very unhealthy for the horse's body to be lunged. And again, if you are going to use side reins, you start that really slow. There's a very, you can really do some damage with side reins too, you guys. Like you, when you put them on, you just have to like let them feel them first. I mean, super, super loose for like the first 10 times, just so they feel that straps and all the stuff on their sides and they incrementally tighten it. But if you are just lunging in a, and then we'll move to a field, you are asking for trouble. You are asking for your horse to run out. They're already bent to the outside, and then you're chasing them around, most likely not. I don't know about her situation, but you got a whip behind them, and you're like cracking the whip, and they're like, why do I have to listen to you? I'm peace out, and they leave. So number one, don't lunge your horse. It's terrible. But if you are lunging your horse, at least lunge them with some side reins on. Now, the advanced level of this is line drive your horse. If you put long lines on your horse, you can control the bend. You can control how soft. You can massage that inside rein. You can hold it and you can give when they relax the pole.
And you can see the bend better too.
And you can see, yeah, you can see the bend. So you're driving them. Drive them in a round pen. Drive them in the arena. Make them turn. Make them use themselves. It is so fun to long line a horse once you start to understand how to hold the lines. And in that situation where your horse starts to get all nutty, you can change their direction. If I have a horse on the long lines and they're blasting outside turn, change it, change the direction, make them turn into the fence and send them forward. If they piss off again, outside turn. It's just instant consequence. Positive instant consequence with long lining is you can soften that inside rein and they go forward and they're like super nice. Negative instant consequences, they buck and fart. It's not your time to buck and fart. You're on the clock, okay? You don't get to play and go crazy when we're in our work time. You're teaching your horse to buck and fart when you're with them. Outside turn, instant consequence. And that's not a pain-mediated consequence. It's more work. It's hard work for a horse to stop in a round pen, take a step and move away and then push off. That is a lot of work for the horse. Great exercise, and it controls their brain a little bit better. You don't have to yank on the line to stop them. Just turn them. You're connected to their mouth and long lining. And I know that you probably driving, Glenn, when your horse gets a little frisky, do you just change direction? Like, what do you do?
Well, actually, it's funny you talk about that, because when we would take him out, he gets all hepped up. We're going out for a drive. You know, he gets all excited and he almost gets a little bit out of control at the beginning. So now what I do before we head out on the roads, especially, is I take him in the arena and we just turn in between the jumps. We turn. I give his brain something to do immediately instead of just go, go, go. He has to think about something. So we'll do that for maybe 5-10 minutes, just weaving in and out, weaving in and out. And then we go out, he's 100 times better. Because he's, I've immediately given his brain something to do, taken his mind off of, we're going to go and go fast, you know? So,
and you've burned a little bit of that energy ahead of time too. You know, when I start a horse,
I think it's mostly mental, to be honest. I think it's, I've engaged his brain. Whereas before, I, you know, he just wants to go. It's not a lot of brain work to just go, you know? So,
That's interesting. That's cool. I mean, you know, when I start a horse for the first time and you get your first couple rides, I'm not just going to take the horse from the round pen out into an open field. You know, like everything is incremental. So if you want to ride your horse in a field and you haven't before, ride them in the around pen or the arena or some controlled environment, and then open the gate. Ride your horse out to the field and turn around and come back into the, you know, don't make it this big event where you're just going to mount them in a 40-acre field. No, start in a controlled environment, go out and come back, go a little further and come back, go a little further and come back, you know, make everything very incremental, but think about your horse's physical nature. When you're lunging your horse, look, they're bent to the outside. That is completely counterproductive for anything else you want to do with your horse. They need to be bent in the direction that they are traveling. So did that answer that question? Jeez. I could go on and on about
you
this.
You want to be at the show. We were out trail riding by the Florida Horse Park while they were having a paint show or something. And oh my God, everybody was lunging. And the one guy, I swear, when he was lunging that horse when we went out, and he was lunging that horse when we came back. And
I just went to a state fair horse show.
Glenn, and it's not lunging, it's chasing him around in a circle, pretty much.
Yeah. And it was on the, there was a, this part was gravel. I was like, oh my God, you guys are killing your horses. They're all bent to the outside. They're all running around, galloping their balls off. Like, it is just, it's just a really bad.
Well, partly because they're not trained and controllable, so they have to wear them down before they even get on.
Yeah, and you know what you're doing is you're just making them more fit. And, yes, you know, and you're making them more fit in the incorrect way, you know. So when you ask your horse to canter and they cross canter, that is because they have been single line lunged way too much. Put them in the long lines, get them bending in the direction, get their brain moving, like Glenn says. You don't even lunge, get on and put them to work. Drax, he's 4 years old. I would never lunge him.
Do you know what the problem with long lining is and getting people to do it?
It's hard.
For the people.
It's hard for the people.
Because you actually have to move. You have to move with your horse. You can't just stand.
Not if you're in a round pen. You don't have to move if you're in a round pen. Okay. It's super easy. I mean, if you have a round pen, they just go around the edges. But you're right. It just takes finesse. But you know what it also takes? It takes horsemanship. It takes education. It takes practice. And so many times, all of us just want to lunge the piss out of them and get on them and ride them and go jump something. You know, I mean, I've been guilty of that my whole life. And then once you realize how, go watch on Monty Roberts University, the videos about single line lunging. They actually put cameras up above the horse that was being lunged. And it's not shocking because you see it when you lunge your horse, they're looking to the outside, but it is a big, light bulb moment. If you haven't noticed that before.
Very good. Well, I have, these were questions that were posted in the auditor room as well, but I know that you get some by email too.
Monica sent me an email, by the way. I love you all. I think you're all amazing. And I think you're all doing a great job by listening. If you've listened this far and you don't hate me, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, and I know that some people are trying to get some clinics set up. They're actually doing your job for you and trying to get clinics set up for you. I know that's happening as well, too.
Good.
So I have a couple really quick stories that I wanted to bring because, well, let's end on a happy note today. Let's talk about a wedding. How would you have felt if you lived in Nebraska and you're having your wedding and you say to the bridal party, hey, look, I don't want you to all have to buy expensive dresses. You just wear whatever you want. This is a backyard wedding. Come with anything you want. It'll be fine.
And that's actually what I said. I only had one person in my wedding and I was like, go buy a dress. And she went to the store, the bridal store, to buy a dress. And they were like, what dress do you need? And she's like, I don't know. I just get to pick it. They were like, what? How does that work?
How would you feel if your sister, who's in your bridal party, showed up in a T-Rex costume?
Are you serious?
Yep.
That's fantastic.
Yep. Walked out. Kay showed up. Nebraska maid of honor showed up at her sister's wedding dressed as a dinosaur after the bridal party was given free reign. You remember the dinosaur video of the dinosaur riding the horse? Well, that's the same costume. Exact same costume. So now you can picture it with the big head and everything.
To be fair, you are getting married in Nebraska. So,
and the sister said, when you're maid of honor, you're told you can wear anything you choose. I regret nothing.
I love it.
There's a video of her walking down the aisle there, you know, and in the costume. By the way, it's gotten 35,000 shares on social media, of course. And the bride appeared to take it in stride and said, "Hey, look, I told my sister she could wear whatever she wanted, and she did. And it'll be a memorable wedding, you know? It's not
that
one that
fantastic.
Anybody...
I love that.
How would you feel about that if your sister showed up? And...
Oh, my God, I love that. I love everything. I mean, she had to know. She knows her sister. Like,
yeah.
She had to know it would get weird.
And you just, and again, everybody knows that sister, too.
Yeah.
You know who didn't look happy in the picture? So you got the, you see them getting married.
Oh, let me guess. The mother of the bride.
Well, I didn't see her, but the bride, other bridesmaids didn't look so happy as this dinosaur standing in the middle of them.
That is so great.
All right. Next story, and this is, we'll end on this, and it's a very happy story. So there were two animals, there were a bunch of animals actually that were rescued. There were peacocks, there were ducks, and then there was Waffles and Hemingway. They were best buds, and they were rescued because they were being malnourished and not treated well. And Waffles is a miniature horse, and he was rescued from a property in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. He had an infection, and it needed to be treated, so they treated it. But when they brought Waffles in, apparently they discovered that Hemingway was not leaving Waffles' side and was very protective of Waffles. They had a close bond already, so they put them in the stall together, and they're now going to be up for adoption, but they have to go together because they're so bonded. And Hemingway is a goose.
Oh,
so you got Waffles the Mini and Hemingway the Goose. They came with those names, by the way. And they're together because they've always been together, and they've actually come in the morning, and Hemingway the Goose has been actually laying on the miniature horse with his neck wrapped around the horse's neck. They're hugging.
So in my experience with geese, I hope Hemingway is a Hemingway.
This is probably the exception when it comes to geese. Now, apparently they have to bring Waffles out to give him treatment for this infection. And Hemingway became very protective and did not want Waffles to leave the premises. So,
oh, this is my surprise face.
So if you would like, they're going to be up for adoption. You can go to the Bucks County SPCA. It's going to be, you can fill out the application, but you do need to adopt both of them because Hemingway and Waffles go together.
Yeah. Doesn't everybody say that at breakfast? Good Lord. That's
and
great.
The pictures are really cute, by the way.
What did you learn today?
What did I learn today? I learned that there might be some well-trained, happy Shetlands in the world. We didn't know that before, but now we know that there's probably some of those. I learned there's different classes to driving. I didn't know that. I just thought we all just went. So I learned that today.
I learned my freestyle needs to be Baby Groot at a Shetland show.
Oh, put Baby Groot out with a bunch of Shetlands if these are going. That would win.
I'm sure it would. I learned that I really got educated today on keeping my horse from becoming arena sour. You actually just don't go in the arena.
That
really was a big light bulb moment for me.
I also learned that there's lots of stuff going on in my own company and with my own listeners that I have no idea about. Apparently.
Yeah, we try not to tell you too much.
I guess. This whole sisterhood of the traveling saddle pad, I knew it existed, but I didn't really pay much attention to it. I didn't realize it already had been to 11 places.
Have you seen Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, the movie?
No, I never saw the movie. I knew there was a movie called that, but I didn't see the movie. Did you see the movie?
No.
So, neither one of them. And I also, if you take that and extrapolate it out, it just goes to show that our listeners are much more clever than we are. So there's that too.
I don't think that was a light bulb moment for you today. I feel like we kind of knew that.
And if you noticed, I also put again today a certain child, Clara, in the opener. Did you notice that? Makes me chuckle every time I hear it.
Yep. You're going to have to keep it in there till we're sick of it.
Yeah. Yes. So Clara apparently heard it yesterday. She played it for Clara, and Clara was very excited to hear her voice in the opener.
I'll tell you what, for backstory, Glenn recorded that. And it drives me crazy because he emphasizes the wrong word. He emphasizes this is the Horse Radio Network.
Right.
And it should be this is the Horse Radio Network. And it drives me crazy. And what did Clara do? Emphasize
exact
the
same thing. And you know, that drove other hosts crazy, which is intentionally why I left it that way.
I know. I'm pretty sure you fired her, though. So.
I did. And it will never change for the history of the Horse Radio Network, just thanks to piss you all off.
Thanks to you spiting this former employee that you fired. Now I'm stuck with that for the rest of my life. So thanks.
Apparently kids love it, so I'm happy. I make children happy. Thank you, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow with the driving episode with Dr. Wendy. And then Friday, some really bad ads. So send in your ads. And we'll give away the prize on Friday, too. So we'll be doing that on Friday and announcing a brand new prize for the month. Prizes, three of them for the month of September coming up. So thank you all. We'll talk to you.
Bay Neuter Geld. Bye.
Hey, we need Clara to say something like, "That's all, folks," or "That's it. Go ride your horse."
You say spay neuter geld, then I won't have to.
Oh, spay neuter geld. Get Clara to say that, because I'm getting sick of Jamie saying it.